Ciao. So wherever you find yourself, physically, take a nice deep breath and exhale. And if you're just joining us, this is the Conscious Business Telesummit, and I am your host, Adela Rubio. And our topic today is self-love is the key to mastering your inner and outer game. So we're just going to bring our intention and our presence and just really come online, taking a nice deep breath and exhale. And I recommend you stand knees soft, take another nice deep breath and exhale. And just feel your breath just deepening and slowing down. You can have your eyes open or your eyes closed. And just sink into the sensation as if you were in a cloud, just sinking into the sensation of now. Feeling yourself more open with immense spaciousness inside, rippling outwardly beyond your skin until the energy of you is free, flowing, unbounded, unleashed. And fully free to express in this moment. Notice your connection to others on this call and others up for the adventure of conscious business and mastering the inner game. And so notice whether the words resonate for you, whether game resonates for you. And if it doesn't, just change the word. Feel the energy. Feel the substance upon which the words ride. Take another nice deep breath. And exhale and feel yourself relaxing and deepening more into the present moment. Awake and aware, eyes wide open, heart wide open, ready to receive, ready to explore the adventure that Dean and Adela and the rest of the Conscious Business Tribe is up for. And so if you can step away from your computer while we are in this conversation and this exploration, do so. If you've got a pad and a pencil and you want to catch a couple of things that really land for you, and you'll know when they land for you because you'll feel it. So just know that there's something for you on this call and know that it's yours. Thank you. So this is call number 8. Self-love is the key to mastering your inner and outer game. And our guest today is Dean Schrock, Dr. Dean Schrock. Dean is an author, a lecturer, and a guided imagery expert. And he has loads of qualifications that if I started reading them, we'd be here for probably 15 minutes. So I'm going to give you the abridged version of what Dean is all about. Dr. Dean Schrock served as the director of mind-body medicine for a physician's management group of 40 cancer centers. Here he developed and researched a wellness program which he taught to thousands of cancer patients and their families. His book, Doctor's Orders, Go Fishing, details this program and the insights he gained while teaching it. In his latest book, Why Love Heals, Dean has compiled solid scientific evidence to support the age-old belief about the power of love. Dean, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, Adela.
This is a hot topic, Dean. We've got loads of questions, so I am going to make sure that we pause so that we've got time to answer the questions. But I wanted to start off with self-love is a term that's been, I mean, in terms of psychology and psychoanalysis and, you know, the mind, we can be quite familiar with what the word means. I'd love for you to give us a context for this exploration. When you talk about self-love, what are you talking about?
Well, it's interesting because I've had to grow into this, Adela. And with my scientific training, we must base everything on substantial research. So my explorations into metaphysics and quantum physics took me out of psychology, but I think was just plain instrumental in differentiating between how I might attempt to explain self-love psychologically, although there would be some similarities to be sure, and how I would talk about it in terms of self-love is really aligning with your soul or your core self, your core essence.
So we don't even have to worry about all the scientific explanations. It's a simple definition, just aligning with your core essence. And yet,
right.
And yet, it's doesn't that seem to be something really, really hard for us to do in our everyday experience?
It is, and that was just what I was about to say, Adela. It's easy, it's simple, but it's not easy. I remember your wonderful call with Ellen Britt on Friday, and she talked about what happens in childhood, and she was quite correct in terms of we learn so many limitations and learn anything other than we're one with the universe and perfect. And so these learned limitations literally function to affect our behavior and our chances for success. So, yeah, this is important that people understand that they need to change their beliefs, and they can do it. But I will tell you, certainly in my work as a psychologist, and I will tell you personally, that this isn't necessarily easy. It's an ongoing exercise.
So you were speaking a little bit about basically, you know, how does conditioned reality distort our view of ourselves?
Well, because you create your own reality. You know, when I was more the scientist in much earlier in my life, and I started reading books like the Seth material saying you create your own reality, a part of me was excited by that, and a part of me goes, you know, this is definitely, you know, it just can't be true, or just sounded, you know, too ungrounded.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that you do. So when you have beliefs that you're not good enough, or you're only feeling good about yourself when you're trying to please others, then you live a life of conformity. In fact, I say that you equate conformity with feeling loved. So you didn't learn to be unique. You didn't learn to be authentic. You learned to follow the dictates of the culture, largely coming from your parents. And you know, I even joke, only it's not funny, you know, if you get yelled at or hit enough, you know, you're not stupid. You're going to catch on, and that becomes your mode of operation. And that's a difficult pattern to break.
And yet it is possible.
Oh, it is possible. Believe me, I wouldn't be here telling you that, you know, that's absolutely possible. And I'm a personal example. You know, I came from a difficult childhood where my father was very difficult. He was a perfectionist, and I would say God bless anyone who has to live or work with a perfectionist, because he knew the right way to do everything, and I was never allowed to say no. I was never allowed to question. I didn't have a voice. So imagine me now, because you know me as the person who definitely has a voice. This has been a long road.
Yeah, and I know that it can be a lifelong adventure, and definitely is not something that happens instantly. But What, you know, I know that many of the folks on this call have had some experiences. I'll venture to say that almost everybody that's on this call will probably have had some moments where they experienced themselves. I forget in which one of your writings you talked about your own mystical experience. And it's so funny because my blog today was about a mystical life, and in our morning call we went and adventured in that arena. But I wonder, could you share a little bit about what you meant when you said mystical experiences? What would you consider a mystical experience?
I think another word is transcendent. That's a word that probably shows up more in scientific literature when we're looking at what we might call mystical experiences. But they're when we have a definite awareness of our connection with something larger than what we understand physically or through our logical mind. And whether they're near-death experiences, whether they're trying to think of another word that's very common, where people, it's like a peak experience where out skiing and just somehow at some point you realize you're actually one with that mountain. Or another common one I ran into a lot because of my work with cancer was when people died. It was very common for the spouse, especially who was left behind, to then have some form of communication from their deceased spouse. And they would come to me as a psychologist, you know, wondering if they were crazy and wanting to tell me what happened so that I might comfort them in some way. In my own experiences, without reservation, the great probability that is, in fact, they were having this direct communication with their spouse, although you would say, well, physically that can't happen. But, of course, it can.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll bet everyone has had some kind of an experience like this. And for me, it raises that question. I think that one of the problems that we encounter with this this awareness of self-love is that we try to get it from where it isn't.
Yeah, that's good. We're looking for love in all the wrong places.
And specifically, because there's something that you're pointing to here with the peak experiences, right? It's an experience. You actually feel it, right?
Oh, you know it. That's one of the crazy things when you try to talk about this scientifically, because knowing scientifically means objective evidence, hard, objective, measurable evidence. And when you're talking about intuitive experiences, they're the antithesis of science. It's talking about a totally subjective understanding. But one of the very special parts about transcendent experiences, which I write about especially in Why Love Heals, is that what I found with people investigating these transcendent experiences, that the number one reason why people usually don't want to share their story is not what most people think, and that's that, you know, they don't want people to think they're crazy. The number one reason why people don't want to share their story is because they don't want it diminished. They know their story is true and real, more real than real. And so I would say that probably, I don't know if I'd go so far to say as the majority of people have had such an experience, but certainly a huge number, certainly the majority have had what we call extrasensory perception experiences. But this one where you just know, I even remember, my wife won't mind my sharing the story, but when I first met her, her husband, she was married and he was dying of cancer. And the day he was diagnosed, you know, she was really sad and cried, she said, most of that day. And she walked to the corner grocery store, and on her way home sobbing, she was just stopped dead in her tracks by the most overwhelming feeling of love. And however she knew or was told, she said, it was told to her that it was simply time for her husband, and that's just the way it was. And even though logically, I mean, Shelley is still dealing with, you know, my husband's dying, I'm going to lose my husband, is she simply knew. And how do you explain that to someone who hasn't that experience? She knew it was okay.
Yeah, and it's a very important piece that it's not something that comes in through your intellect. It's not something that comes in through your reasoning, is it?
No, it isn't. In fact, that's one of the real problems, again, when we try to teach people about expanded consciousness and connecting with the quantum field or, you know, whatever we talk about in terms of all that is it doesn't happen through your logical left brain hemisphere. It happens through the right brain hemisphere and exercises and altered states of consciousness like dreams and meditation and prayer.
Yeah, and I know that that you're going to take us through something like that today, so I'm very excited. In a little while, we're going to actually have an experience. But that's one of the things that I wanted to make sure that you touched on, is that I think that one of the stumbling blocks for us is, especially when it comes to this self-love thing, which for me also, I'll just come right out and say this was a big issue for me for a really long time in my own life, and that trying to address it from a place where it isn't available, which is, you know, in your head, you know, trying to change your mind about, you know, how you feel about yourself, that's just like trying to do it from a place where it can't possibly happen, and the easiest place, the easiest access to it is going to be something like the experience that you're going to take us through in a little while. I know that you've got this. One of the cool things about your book is that you took like all this like different scientific, you know, like really, really like, you know, science stuff, and you really, really brought it down to earth and made it really so practical and so understandable. And so I'd love for you to speak a little bit, because I was when I read this in your book, I was like, wow, I'd never thought of it that way. When you talked about love, about, you know, the universe and quantum physics and what love actually is.
Okay, would you like me to say a little?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, this isn't something that I, you know, all of a sudden I had this revelation. It indeed took time. And when I wrote my first book, Doctor's Orders Go Fishing, based on my experience with cancer and finding that my patients were living much longer than those just receiving conventional care, is to come to terms when we did the research, why was that true? Because I was really looking at the will to live, but my patients found that too selfish to really think about themselves. So I couldn't comfortably say it was the will to live. And that's when they told me it was not any particular coping skill I taught them, not guided imagery, not stress management, not the will to live. It was that I listened and I cared and I was sincere. And Adela, I struggled with that. I really didn't get that at first, but only after a while, when I concluded in my research it was around feeling loved and cared for, which coincided with Dean Ornish's work with heart disease and James Lynch's research with heart disease. I'm more talking about 20, 30 years of research. Then I started to become more comfortable with it, but my own left brain kicked in and go, okay, this sounds nice, but how does this work? So that's when I started to look at numbers of other things. And I would say the one thing that really got my attention was quantum physics. And beginning to understand what actually Nobel Prize-winning physicists had determined, that underlying all of reality as we understand it and think of it is another primary reality of this quantum field, and its fundamental characteristics are harmony and order and compassion. In fact, some of these physicists literally called that quantum field an energy of love. So that's why I define love as oneness. It is, in fact, who we are. We are all this oneness. We are all love. We are all God or the sacred or holy, chi, ki, this zero-point field manifesting in form. It's who we are. And when we resonate with that, when we experience love, an example I like to use is if you remember when we learned in school sometime, if you sprinkled iron filings on a paper or card and placed it over a magnet, and then the iron filings would take the form or shape of the magnet's force field. That's what love literally does to the molecules of your body. And so when you are experiencing love, and ideally self-love means you really understand who you are and you're living your truth, then everything goes better. Another example is like with electricity. if we have an ohm meter and it's going to actually measure the resistance of the flow of the electricity, is we have another term in electricity called in phase, which means there is little or no resistance of that flow. And so that's what happens with us. When we are experiencing love, we are in sync. We are in phase. And then we allow for the maximal flow of this quantum field or life force energy.
And so what some can you just tell us some of the simple things that what is it that we do that has us get in the way of this flow?
Yeah. Well, I define stress as anything that's in opposition to love or oneness. That's a huge list.
But I like the way that you summed it up succinctly, stress.
Yeah. Stress is a killer. When even Dean Ornish did his fantastic research with heart disease, he said that it was really about stress, nutrition, and exercise in particular, and he's become especially known for his vegetarian approach. But by far, he stated in his writings that it's the stress component. And I couldn't concur more, because it's whenever we do anything that suggests separation from this field, that again restricts the flow of this life energy. And, you know, your cells basically do two things. They're either in a growth mode or they're in a protective mode. And so stress automatically puts them in a protective mode. Eventually the cell deteriorates, and there are all kinds of consequences. So we want to do whatever is in harmony or resonance with love. And that's why I honestly believe and talked about in my book why I think we've been taught to be virtuous, not in terms of right or wrong or good or bad, because when you are virtuous, these are resonant energies, and they literally contribute to the survival of the species. Now, I don't think most people understand that when they talk about why they would be virtuous, but that's what I understand.
Yeah, and the other thing that came up while you were speaking was this whole idea. I know that many of us, you know, are very familiar. We've been on a spiritual path where we're definitely more open, you know, to the energy of our beings. And so we've heard this phrase, you know, the illusion of separation. And I can see how it impacts our capacity for resonance, right? Because if you, right?
Yeah, yeah. I call, if I could create a new diagnostic code, I would call it forgotten identity. Mm. Our greatest ailment is we have forgotten our divinity. We've forgotten our magnificence. I love your word, brilliance. We've forgotten our brilliance.
Yeah. And so we know that the pathway that's full of all kinds of, you know, stumbling blocks is the intellectual one, because it's not one that actually has us link up and sync up with this field of resonance. So what are some of the ways that you've found, Dean, that are the easiest ways to just align yourself that'll just take you into this open and flowing state that we are naturally?
Yeah, I have one great recommendation, Adela, and I call go fishing. And it's my way of saying, of course, do what brings you the greatest joy and meaning in your life. And, of course, there's common sense. When you're busy doing what you like to do, we all know you tend to forget your aches and pains. But when you're going fishing, when you're doing what brings you true joy, joy is a fundamental aspect or frequency of love. And so what better, in fact, I used to think I was giving my patients a license to steal when we told them as part of their treatment for cancer, we wanted them to make time every day to do something that really brought them great joy. Now, remember, of course, they found that too difficult, most of them. But It was, in fact, when we learned later, there was a much greater rationale and understanding for why, in fact, this will to live was going to be so health-sustaining. So by far, I would say to people, but they've got to learn to do this guilt-free, and that's part of the where I say it's simple, but it isn't easy, because most people in my experience have to justify making time for themselves, and that's why partly I titled the book Doctor's Orders Go Fishing, because I thought, well, you know, my experience was if the doctor told you to do it, you were much more likely to do it. So therefore, I could let you off the hook. You know, it wasn't your decision. You know, the doctor made me do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gives them freedom to do it.
Which is crazy. And I would say to them, though, you know, but at your age, not really your age, but your life experience and wisdom, that you need permission from anyone to do what you really want, that's crazy.
Yeah, and yet, Dean, you know, the majority of the planet does walk around without questioning traditions and rules and ways of being that, you know, that have been thrust upon us.
Right.
You know, who is it that said the unexamined life is not worth living? Is it Emerson? It's most of us do not really think that this level of engaging life deeply and profoundly and richly is even possible.
Right. They don't even have that thought. And I will go back again to that we learned early on to equate love with conforming. You know, our nature is love. We will die for love. And so when you learn early on to equate love with doing what everybody else thinks and wants you to do, you're not going to be unique. You're not going to be creative. You're not going to look outside the box. And you will resist others who try to get you to do it because deep inside you're creating this huge dissonance.
Yeah, we've got a number of emails from people that they're on the polarity continuum. A couple of people actually mentioned self-loathing in their questions. Could you speak a little bit to this whole experience of self-loathing? What's actually happening and what's possible? What's possible when people are in that kind of a state?
I would recommend the one thing probably as much as any other, even more than going fishing, I would say it's mindfulness. You know, when I learned about guided imagery and hypnosis, the whole premise was to focus on what you want, not what you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
But when I learned about mindfulness, you know, at first I simply couldn't accept it because mindfulness says focus on exactly what's going on in the present moment. So if you were in great pain or whatever was happening to you in some traumatic way, self-loathing, whatever, the idea that I would now say to you to focus on exactly what you're thinking and feeling, how could mindfulness and guided imagery and self-hypnosis both be right? But the crazy thing about this is that both work wonderfully well. I call mindfulness the perfect act of loving yourself. It's accepting and loving yourself just the way you are. So for the people or the person asking this question, I would say, you know, if you had a best friend who was really feeling out of sorts, depressed, whatever, ideally, in fact, you wouldn't try to fix this person, judge this person, change this person. You would be there for your friend. And even if you didn't know what to do, you would say something like, you know, I don't know what we're going to do, but I'm going to stay with you until we figure this out, no matter what. Do this for yourself. Love yourself. So when you're feeling really, really crummy, it's not easy to sit down and think positive thoughts. Let yourself really go into how you're feeling, accept and love yourself. And surprisingly, these people might find it's transformative by itself in that act of mindfulness.
Yeah, it's like when you bring your attention and awareness to how you're feeling, it shifts.
And until I did that for myself, there's no way you could have convinced me that was true. And then, of course, I had many patients tell me, especially when I was working with pain, and pain is really unfunny. And people would tell me, oh, my God. And so I had to grow into that one, too.
Hmm. So this kind of, like, goes hand in, at least it feels for me like it kind of goes hand in hand. We're actually going to have later on in the series Colin Tipping, who speaks to forgiveness. Actually, that's his work. But I was wondering if you could speak a little bit, even though you already started this, how does self-forgiveness impact our ability to experience self-love?
Well, self-forgiveness is really about remembering who you are. And instead of trying to forgive yourself for being imperfect, you know, trying to live up to somebody else's ideas about what is. In fact, let me digress, and you may have to remind me where I'm coming back to this. But if I were to ask you and your listeners to think of any subject they think they know a lot about, any subject at all, when will the day come you will know everything there is to know about that subject?
Probably never.
Not going to happen. That's exactly what people come up with. So what this leads to then is if you'll never know everything about a particular subject, you'll never know everything about any subject. And more than that, when you know through quantum physics that consciousness literally creates, that underlying this physical reality and this what we call this primary reality is only a field or realm of potential that doesn't take form until consciousness is introduced, this is what's so cool, Adela. It's all made up. And if people understood that they really do create their own reality. So then after saying that, bring me back to where you wanted me to go with this about self-forgiveness.
Well, just how it impacts our ability to love ourselves.
Well, again, it's like if you eat too much bad food and it clogs your arteries, it stops that flow of energy that is what fuels everything else. So if you are not in touch with your brilliance and you're focused on trying to live up to these arbitrary ideals, that's obviously going to take from the energy of, hey, I can be anything I want to be for real. Now, I will say that I'm also convinced that we have what I call a soul script or life plan where we came to experience certain things on purpose that we might view as negative, but I believe they honestly serve the purpose of teaching us to love ourselves more fully or come to love, understand love more fully. But self-forgiveness is more about forgiving yourself or forgetting that you're already perfect.
Yeah, like there's not anything that, it's not like there's something for you to get. It's already here, right?
That's the truth. Yes,
and,
it is.
And it's a gap in awareness, perhaps. But that's about it.
Right. But in saying that, that doesn't mean, okay, you just get it. As you say, even if we entertain this intellectually, that's one thing. But we have to get it at a feeling level. I know in doing inner work with people that, if they have an intellectual insight, but there isn't emotion accompanied with that insight, it's just an insight, but it's not going to change things.
You've got to be able to feel it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, can you take us through so we can feel it?
Well, I don't think I want to try to do more of a therapeutic exercise and a self-forgiveness one. I know that you'd wanted me to do something, so I thought I would do something where I say you experience the energy of your soul or the energy of quantum field, and then we can talk about, to the extent we have time or your listeners are interested, about what that experience was, but at least they have that opportunity or it would be an example of what they can do. When I say go fishing or to do mindfulness, but to pause and allow themselves to be in touch with their core essence and what that really feels like. And I will pretty much guarantee you, I know you, but your listeners are going to end up with a smile on their face.
Okay, wonderful. Great. Thank you, Dean.
Okay. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, please make yourself comfortable. Close your eyes. And slowly inhale fully and deeply. And as you inhale, imagine energy being drawn into your body. Exhale each breath in a slow and relaxed manner, breathing out any sense of stress or negativity. Take a number of these breaths now, breathing in and out fully and deeply. So now you're going to experience your own inner love. I'd like you to take more deep breaths, slowly and deeply, and imagine the life force or quantum energy now filling your heart. As Adela and I talked about a moment ago, self-love is the aligning of yourself with your infinite, eternal self or soul. It is the realization of your true identity and sacredness of your divine source and connection. So now as you continue breathing slowly and deeply, I want you to say to yourself, I am one with all that is. And now I'm going to pause for a couple of minutes while you feel the energy of your soul. Just take your time right now and pay attention to whatever thoughts and images come into your awareness as you now say, I feel the energy of my soul. Take your time. And then slowly begin to return your awareness to your outer conscious awareness, becoming more alert, more aware, gradually adjusting to the light as you slowly begin to open your eyes, becoming more aware of your environment, and only feeling good. So how was that for you, Adela?
I don't feel like coming back.
That's pretty normal. People don't want to open it. When I do it live, you know, people really don't want to open their eyes, and it usually does make me smile and laugh. And but it's a great experience to observe and certainly to experience firsthand that, oh, you know, because this whole thing didn't even take 5 minutes. And that's what you can do. And that's what's extra cool about guided imagery. And when it's recorded on a CD, and I used to do this and do them custom even, but now I have some more commercially available. So people don't have to worry about how to word things or what to do. They, especially once they identify with a certain person or voice, you know, that kind of just triggers them to go right where they need to go anyhow. And then, as you'd like to say, and open to whatever it is that you want to do. And I will tell you that the key in the end is it's all about openness and intention. When you've got that part figured out, your intuition and everything else, just that's it. And I don't care what psychological or energy technique you're doing, it's all about your openness and your intention and your accepting that once you put the thought out there, that thought creates, it's simply going to manifest. It's only a matter of time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will tell you, too, that I've noticed, Dean, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, is that when you do an experience like this in a group, how super amped up and powerful it is.
Yes, yes. That collective consciousness, that collective energy, it's absolutely transforming. And there's research to demonstrate it, but yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So, folks, on the line, when you listen to the replay, I'm certain also this is the thing, too, that the energy of what's occurring as all of us come together and experience this connection, this oneness, what I call DC, direct current. It's transformative. It's just like your whole body.
You know,
yeah.
I'll give you a rather extreme example. In the sense that it may sound very odd at first, but what I found was even in the most dire circumstance, like when 9/11 happened,
mm-hmm.
and people were saying, how do we respond to this event? And, you know, a lot of it had to do with revenge and, you know, something to do with terrorism or whatever. And my response, and I know it initially this sounded so crazy, I told people to go fishing. Because not only is that an energy that you are now creating that goes through your own body, which was largely my work in dealing with people's health, but that energy goes out into the universe. So coming back to your comments now about group consciousness, is if in a relatively few number of us, you know, were to truly take on the consciousness of living our truth, that we are love and harmony and compassion, and conducting that in our lives, that will transform the world and our economic conditions and your business. You change your inner game, and it changes everything else in your life. Your body, your health, your relationships, your business are mirrored by how you feel inside about yourself.
Yeah. I remember I wrote an article last year, and I said, transformation begins in your own zip code. This is actually how we ripple. This is how we change the planet. And it's so amazing, because the thing that happens with this too, Dean, is that, you know, as we really connect and get who we really are, we show up differently, right? So not only does the body, of course, responds to it in the way that it does, because the body is organized intelligence, just like life, the universe. But then what's possible, Dean? What's possible for people once they are this energy?
Okay. Well, let me make one comment first. When I would say to, excuse me, referring to my cancer patients again, and tell them to go fishing as a way to try to help them appreciate why this isn't a selfish thing at all, but if they had a spouse or a best friend or someone who they knew well, is to think about, after that person goes and does something they really love, are they not nicer to live with and work with? It's just absolutely the case. So when you realize that, instead of thinking it as selfish, as you're kicking your spouse in the butt and say, hey, go out and do it again. Because you know that it affects your relationship and whether or not you want to be with them or work with them. So it's absolutely possible, and you can learn it either by practicing things like bringing more joy into your life and seeing how that begins to change things, do the guided imagery, do the mindfulness, do the meditation. But it's about taking on a different mindset and doing things that remind you. So whether you've got, you know, dream boards or vision boards or affirmations or you do things during the day where you just automatically take breaks to remind yourself instead of, you know, how the day goes on, and I don't care who you are, it has a way of catching up with you and beating you down, is to take natural planned breaks. Go to the bathroom. Do something. Even if you're at work, nobody's going to bug you if you say I have to go to the bathroom. You just have to do things where you remind yourself and refocus that who you really are, and no matter what anybody else thinks, you're going to live your awareness.
Yeah, so they actively have to choose.
Oh, there's no magic here. There's no, you must, that, you know, here's this, what I say, the good news and the bad news. The good news is this works. The bad news is you have to do it.
Yeah. And I'll bet, Dean, that in the beginning, it's, because I noticed this for myself and even with my own clients and people that I work with, in the beginning, it's like a practice. And you have to, you know, remind yourself and over and over. But it's like a CD groove. Once you know you keep making a choice over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, then you start showing up like this most of the time, and then you just have the blips where you, like, fall asleep. Oh, okay. Right?
It is right, and especially if you do it in a meditative state where you're resonating with this quantum field,
yeah.
What you do and say at that point is magnified considerably more than if you do it at an outer conscious level. That's why guided imagery is extra effective, or self-hypnosis and meditation. And there's really considerable research demonstrating why, in fact, usually when you do guided imagery, you do a relaxation procedure first. Because when you do the deep relaxation, then coupled with the guided imagery, it's much more powerful.
Ah. Yeah, some of us do it instinctively, we know. And that's the other thing, too. I think that the other thing is that once you really start experiencing this state of being, you have access to all kinds of knowing information that later on you may read about it and you're like, oh, and I knew that, right?
Right.
But, I mean, that's one of the things that I find really, really interesting, is that we have an access to a level of knowing that's extraordinary.
Right. You see, the way the quantum field works, and this is a holographic universe, so every part contains the whole. Just like every cell in your body has the codes for every organ and every system in your body. And so when any part knows, all knows, because it's all connected. Mm-hmm. So all knowledge already exists. It's a matter of tapping into it. And then, as Einstein said when he got most of his theory of relativity from his dreams, you still have to have a working knowledge of the information you got to make sense of it. But all knowledge already exists. You just have to tap into it. And whenever you have a thought or question, it goes out in terms of what we call harmonic resonance, or harmonic inductance, sympathetic resonance in physics terms. And then literally that information, because it's on the same wavelength, is a natural attraction. There's your openness and your intention, and bingo, there's your answer.
Yeah. So, yep. Folks, this is really the way to go. I mean, to me, this is like the quickest way to access these states of brilliance and being that are magnificent and have you showing up amazingly. Dean, I wanted to take the time is just flying as usual, and I wanted to take we've got a few questions. So this first one is from Shirley. Hi, Dr. Schrock. The topic for this call has really caused an emotional response for me. I'm a woman in my mid-50s and have struggled with low self-esteem since my childhood. I've gone through years of counseling, taking antidepressants, writing and saying affirmations, listening to subliminal recordings, even tried hypnosis, but I still have difficulty keeping a job and maintaining relationships. I attribute this to self-sabotage caused by feelings of worthlessness that I can't seem to shake. I really believe the key to being financially secure, happy, healthy, and loved is by loving and accepting myself. So why can't I do that? What advice can you give me? Thank you so much.
Yeah, that was extremely well stated, Shirley. And I would say that this is, you're not the Lone Ranger here, that pretty much everybody in different degrees goes through this. You know, when I say this may be hard to accept at first, but I will tell you that this is all part of your soul's journey. I want to say it in a much more positive way, that your soul actually chose to take on a physical body. It's like this physical amusement park ride. you know, that has lots of ups and downs and spins and turns, and it all serves a good purpose. But in terms of you're doing your best to break or change this pattern, the one thought that came to me initially is be careful of your environment. You know, it's like, who are you hanging out with? You know, so often when we try to change children's behavior, but they go back into the home and the other negative influences, you know, it's really difficult to change that. So, one, you may want to think about how you can modify your setting so that you take more time, make more time to be in positive settings. You know, connect with people on Adela's program in the morning. Accountability is huge. If you could find someone you could connect with, even just one person, so you could check in with each other and say what's happening and, you know, some things you might want to do, you know, like to do guided imagery or whatever, and then get the reinforcement either from Adela's group or any one individual in that group. But you simply have to take more measures. And one, you may find it easier to do the mindfulness, but just like brushing your teeth or anything else you do on a regular basis, it's, you have to take this seriously. And somehow, through thick or thin, the way I used to say to my cancer patients, even if this sounds too good to be true, you've never heard of anything like this before, I will tell you that there are hundreds of thousands of studies proving what I'm telling you. So if you can say to yourself, if this has worked for anybody else, then damn it, it works for me. And then you just have to stay with it.
Great. Yeah, environment is huge. Environment is really huge. And as you mentioned, being with a resonant group that you'll be able to vibe up into the energy of the group until you really are feeling that yourself, that's one of the quickest ways to really get yourself into a better feeling place and understanding of what's really going on for you. So
yeah,
great advice. Yeah.
Yeah, get a tune-up.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. great. Our next one is from Peter. Self-love sounds great, but what about when you are unlovable, when you do things that drive everyone away and you find yourself disgusting? Never been lovable, tried all my life to be good and always fail. Nothing to love in me.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to start off in a very strange place, so please bear with me when I say this, because this is going to sound almost horrible to begin with. You know, unless, Peter, you have considered suicide, and this is the horrible part, I am not suggesting this for one moment, but unless you are actually intending to take your life, every other decision you make says, I want to live. So that's when I would say to you to focus on, okay, what is it I do want in my life? Even though right now it doesn't sound attainable, there's nothing else to reinforce for you that, you know, this is possible. It's to open to that possibility, and like I said with Shirley, is to stick with it, but practice the mindfulness. And the other part is, and within the seminar that I've created special for Adela for this Conscious Business Telesummit, I have guided imagery exercises, and we talk about it in the seminar, is how you can get in touch with that part of yourself. Sometimes it's referred to in psychology as an inner child. But you can get in touch with that wounded part of you, and in loving it, like you I suggested earlier, like in loving a best friend, as that part of you begins to heal, the rest of you begins to heal, and you see life differently. You know, what you used to focus on, you'll find you just don't have that same focus because, Adela would say, your inner game is really very different.
Mm. Yeah. Great. We've got loads of questions here. I'm going to try at least two more because I do want to save a little bit of time so we can talk about your wonderful program that's coming up, Dean. This is from Danielle. Is it possible to hold a space for you and your partner, or must these shifts always result in a severance? In other words, if one partner has a lack and fear attitude, can the one working on releasing those things once and for all affect the other positively simply by holding space?
Absolutely. What happens is that it's one of the crazy things I've observed in my work is that you will attract an opposite in a relationship, whether it's a spousal relationship, whether it's with a coworker, whether it's with your pet. And I say if you have children, I say you've got devils and angels in the same batch, and you want to pull your hair out thinking, what in the world did I do that these kids could be so different? and it's part of your energy, and you will attract someone, I say, for a healing dance, who will bring up your stuff, who will push your buttons so that you will look more closely at these things and ideally see them as opportunities to learn and grow in the way that energetically they're filling in your void or aspects of yourself that you've rejected. So a wonderful exercise is actually to have people think about someone they really dislike and list all the things they dislike about that person. And here's the real eye-opener. That's you. Everything you dislike in somebody else is you that you've disowned, and they're helping bring it up for you so you can learn to love yourself. And so as you change your energy, that's the way you change others, because you can't change them, but you can change you. And in order for them to be in energetic resonance with you, they either have to change in a way that's going to resonate with you, or you will both find different ways to express and other partners or ways to feel good about yourself and to learn and grow.
Wonderful. Thank you. We've got other questions, but we don't have time for everything, folks. So if you've got a question that you'd like to make sure that you get an answer to, please do make sure that you put your email address in it so that we can respond, so that I can respond. And if it's something that I can't speak to, I can certainly forward it to Dr. Schrock, and he can answer it for you. So wonderful. I'd love if you could tell us, we've only got a few minutes left, but I'd love if you could tell us a little bit about the program that you created, especially for Mastering the Inner Game.
Yeah, and I really do appreciate this, Adela, because I've learned in doing other promotions how I've triggered in others to do some things that they've been putting on hold or wanting to do. And so I want to thank you for the motivation to get me to do this seminar, because this is something I've really wanted to do all my life. And now that I feel more free from my scientific practice of psychology and feel more comfortable, as I say, to speak my truth, this seminar is really giving me that opportunity. So I thought about, you know, a practical amount of time, and, you know, what are the pearls? You know, what can I tell you, at least based on my 30-plus years of experience and training, that I think will transform your life? And that's what I call this teleseminar, How to Transform Your Life. So coming up starting February 16th, that's a Tuesday, for 7 consecutive Tuesdays, I'm going to teach this. There's really 6 classes, but the 7th class I'm going to make sure that everybody's questions get answered, that we really pull this all together and people can feel comfortable with the information. I've certainly learned as a psychologist and all the work I've done that when you present new information, you don't just integrate it. It just doesn't become a part of you. So I want to make myself available through emails throughout the whole course to answer questions, to do whatever I can to make sure people really get this and that the program will stay up indefinitely, exclusively for people who do take part in the teleseminar. And I don't know how much time we have to get into some of the content or other details, but you tell me where to go from here, Adela.
Well, I know that you've got a page set up with loads of details, and we also, if folks, you know, this is the thing, if check in, you know, you can even listen to the audio again, the exercises. This is what I've noticed. If something is for you, you know it's for you. And if Dean's approach, his energy, really resonated with you, then just check it out and check in for yourself. He's written a lovely, he set up a lovely page really detailing the program and what's going to be in it. But if folks have questions, what I would do is I would email dean@deanschrock.com. So you can go and check out the page. It's at consciousbusinesstelesummit.com/transform. I'll send it an email, as I always do. And it's also, if you're on the webcast, there's a button in the lower left-hand corner. And if you click on that button, it will take you to the page. So if you see, you know, you start reading the material and you feel yourself like a little electrical energy, and your energy's opening up, and you're getting a little excited, or you're feeling like, oh yeah, and the things are just, that's how you, for me, that's how I know my yes. And if there's any questions that come up for you around it, that if there's something specifically that you want to make sure gets covered or a particular question that you have, then what I would do is I would email Dean and ask him that question, dean@deanschrock.com, because it's really important for you to see what it is that you want to get out of a program. And in these programs, you know, you can't address everything that's happened in decades, right? But let me tell you something. In 7 weeks of working together with someone who's masterful at leading and managing the energy of a group and content and people who are aligned for this work and for this message, if you are ready to transform your life and you work together with a group of people and with a facilitator who really has a solid understanding and mastery of the topic, which I know Dean does, then if this is for you, you will be amazed at what can happen in 7 weeks. I just have done a program for 29 days. And if I shared with you everything that everyone's experiencing in that 29 days of working together with an intention of opening up to the energy of who you are, which was really the intention for my series, I can tell you that you would not believe how this transcends time and space, and what you think is totally undoable, what you think is unhealable. Miracles happen when people come together with an intention and the energy of openness that I know that Dean is. Anyway, I know Dean, so I wouldn't have him in my series if I didn't wholeheartedly believe in his mission and his work. And so I know that he put this together. He never has done this before, so he put this together. He's worked for 30-something years in this field, and so he put this together for my community to be able to share what it is that he does so brilliantly. So if Dean speaks to you and you know who you are, just go to consciousbusinesstelesummit.com/transform. Dean, it is always delightful to dance with you, my love.
Thank you.
Yeah, it definitely is.
You know much I appreciate you, and it's been fun for me to observe you and you growing into your brilliance. And I want to say how much I've enjoyed this telesummit. I've listened to all of the interviews prior to this, as a way to help me understand more about what you're trying to do within the summit so I could be the best guest possible. But I learned a great deal and learned a great deal about you, and I'm really pleased.
Oh, so, thank you, Dean. Yeah. We're mutual fans for sure. Thank you so much. Well, I'm going to put us on interactive so everyone can say goodbye. It's been wonderful. And, you know, you can only get so much in 1 hour of an amazing person. So if Dean's work speaks to you, please go to consciousbusinesstelesummit.com/transform. Thank you, everyone. So we will see you all tomorrow. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you so
much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. See you in the quantum field, Dean.
What's tomorrow, Adela?
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key.